This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Chris Miroff. And Chris is both an investor, an author, and a lot more. Chris, can you take a moment and tell us about yourself, and then we'll talk about what you're watching, where you're most focused, and a lot more. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me. I got my start in venture capital and investing a little bit later in life. Back in 2011, started my own business as an entrepreneur in Austin, Texas. And one of the first guys I met in Austin is a guy who runs a fairly large venture capital firm, and got connected with him and then decided, man, I really want to find out more about this, whole business lifestyle as it relates to investing. I love the entrepreneurial world, but I think I really like the investing world. Anyway, got connected with him and asked him to mentor me in my business evolution as it related to my company and beyond. Turned out to be one of the best things I ever did. Not only did he help for me to understand how to grow the business, but also how to do that with a mindset that wasn't as a practitioner of the business as much as an owner of the business. That really set me up well to understand the investment world and ultimately the venture capital world. So after about, 5-6 years of building my business, started to really think about how to pivot away from just the entrepreneurial world and into the investment world, started to pull some capital out, bootstrap some businesses, bring on operators of those businesses. And then that pivoted me in 2018, 2019 into venture capital.
And talk about both. You had mentioned sort of thinking about things as an owner, an operator, an investor. Talk about that for a moment, the difference between thinking of things as an investor versus an owner or operator. And also, what was that pivot to venture capital like, and what did that look like?
Yeah, for me, as an entrepreneur, my mentality had seen my parents as entrepreneurs, really emotionally connected to not only owning the business, but running the business, working in the business. And so as an operator, I saw them be necessary. And then when they weren't there or available, I saw that their business suffered because they were so integral to the operation of that particular business. And so as an entrepreneur, when I launched out on my own, I needed to operate, but I really wanted to set myself up eventually to be unnecessary in the operation of the business, so I could focus primarily on overall direction and really get ready for an exit at some point and understand what the difference was. And in my mentality at the time, it was really focused on employing my community. So my entrepreneurial thesis is really about employment. And then my kind of investment thesis is to invest into owners, operators that are employee centric. And so I was able to kind of carry that thesis from entrepreneur right into investor and really just kind of shift my focus on how I was spending my time. And that really for me came easily. I was never emotionally connected necessarily to the business itself. I was emotionally connected to the running of the business. And so that really helped me out quite a bit to understand how to show up for employees and how to get them to want to give their very best. But at the end of the day, it is a business. And for me, it needed to be something that I could part ways with at some point. And that's really what I kind of had to go through emotionally to understand the difference.
And this is a fascinating perspective, because anybody that's had a venture capital investor or private equity investor at some point understands that private equity and VC has sort of this love-hate relationship with the CEO or the founder entrepreneur. They love them, but the whole thesis of many of these things is to become a more institutional company that's also less reliant on that founder or CEO. So it's a fascinating dynamic often, and you speak to it well, even in your own self, of being an operator, but wanted to become an operator that wasn't so wedded to the business that the business could thrive even without you as a leader and partner in it. Fascinating. And so as I fast forward, did you raise funds as a venture capitalist? Did you just one-off two deals as a venture capitalist? What does that look like today?
Yeah, so my initial foray into venture capital was raising my own capital out of the business that I had created. And I think it's because I was still in that in-between. I was kind of an entrepreneur, but I was kind of an investor. And so I didn't want to go full into the investment yet. I was still kind of in love with the idea of owning and operating my own business. And at the time, I had the luxury of pulling capital out while not hurting the operation of the business. And so I lived in the in-between for about, I would say, a good year to 2 years. And then the pandemic happened. And so we just kind of had to buckle down and get through a very precarious 12 to 24 months with fledgling businesses that I had launched. Some survived, some didn't survive. And that really, I think, finally got me to understand I need to pick where I'm going to spend my time and energy and effort. Am I going to spend my time as an operator, or am I going to spend my time as an investor? And so that, for good or for bad, it really kind of helped me move the dial. Probably starting in late 2021, early 2022, decided to pursue exiting that business that I had started back in 2011 to be able to go all in on the venture capital. And so we had an exit actually this January from that business, which now has fully capitalized our venture capital fund.
Congratulations. And when you're looking at starting, and you know, people do this in multiple different ways. They could be minority investors side by side with lots of other investors. They could be principal investors, really, you know, around several businesses, one to several businesses, but really either principal or majority investors, or, you know, or substantial investors. What are you doing? Are you the principal investor in a number of things? If you want to talk about what size checks you're writing to be an investor in these situations, or are you a minority, almost a limited partner in some of the businesses? What's your model?
Yeah, that's a great question. We really had to debate around, so I have a group of managing partners with me, and we went back and forth on how to define that thesis and how to kind of figure out what we felt comfortable doing, what we had experience doing. And we really landed on coming at the end of like a seed round. We love to finish out seed rounds. And so what we ended up finding was being in Austin's great because there are a lot of startups, a lot of fundraising, and there are a great network of folks that we got into that pass deals along based on knowing who we are and how we want to interact with our investments. So we find coming in as a minority owner at the very end of the tail end of a seed round is kind of our sweet spot. And then being the first in on a Series A is kind of our next step. It's kind of the evolution. It's, okay, we're going to close out the seed and then we're going to see them kind of pivot into a Series A. And so we want to be a big part of that Series A as well. So we love that kind of sweet spot. We write checks anywhere from, you know, about $250,000, you know, to about $1 million into that investment range. And again, our thesis is built on finding owners, operators that are employee centric. And so it also really cuts down, you know, on our investment opportunities because of that.
100%. When you're doing a seed round, a traditional seed round, like I just invested in a seed round for a company, literally committed early this week. And in that seed round, the company has no product yet, you know, no customers yet, but has a thesis and has great founders that have done this successfully a couple other times. When you're doing a seed round, are you typically looking at a true venture capital seed round where there's not a business yet, but there's a business plan, or are you already investing in something that's more of an existing business with a product, some revenue, some customers? Where is that at with what you're doing?
That's a great question. So we find or have found businesses that are in the kind of in between what you described. So they are a company that's launched, they've got a plan, they might even have a few customers, but are on the cusp of like either really being able to define well what their customer base should look like in the future, and or have taken on a couple of those customers already. And so what that does for us is it hedges our bets a little bit. We understand now kind of that path to profit. So ours is really this more practical path to profit. And so we've got a group that we bring on or a part of our venture capital fund that helps us on the due diligence side to really reflect and review on that path to profit. And so that's what helps us understand kind of our risk tolerance into a particular business.
Thank you very, very much. And sort of like thinking about this, I'll ask you two questions that are related. One is, what's the one thing that makes you excited about an opportunity? And what's the one thing that immediately turns you off about an opportunity?
Yeah, that is a great question. And that's the real litmus test for us. It's going to come down to that owner, founder, operator. Are they the kind of person that I want to do business with? They might have the best idea on the planet, but if I get a phone call from them, I see their name on my phone and I kind of roll my eyes. That is the thing that we're trying to avoid at all costs. Life is too short to get stuck into a fantastic financial opportunity that is spiritually, psychologically, and emotionally draining. So we look for people that are really determined to invest into their employees in a way that is the better mousetrap. And so that's really what we focus on is it's about productivity and production, but the way to get there based on our philosophy of leadership is so vastly different than most organizations that we look for people who are more like-minded as we are as it relates to how to treat their people.
No, I think that's fantastic. And couldn't agree with you more that the number one thing, it'd be a great business, but if the founder is not, if you can't love the founder or the CEO or the leadership, then you can't do it. If exactly that issue is like, oh my God, they called, you don't want to talk to them. Could not agree more.
Yeah.
I could not agree more. So tell us, I'll ask you one more question today, Chris. What are you most focused on and excited about this year? Tell us where you're most focused and excited this year.
We are starting, we're from a bootstrapping perspective, we are starting a lifestyle brand. And what we've done is we've actually opened that up to some of our other investors, some of our other network partners. And the network, the lifestyle brand is built on, of all things, a sawmill up, and I'm right now up in the state of Maine, up here in this great state called Maine Woods Outfitters. And so what we're doing is we are excited to jump into kind of a larger play around e-commerce connected with brick and mortar, connected with kind of the blue collar, the Main Street industries. And so we are big into Main Street over Wall Street from an investment standpoint. So this truly touches all things that we are excited about. And so that's really our biggest focus this year is going to be getting into more blue collar, again, Main Street type businesses as we look to the future of kind of where those businesses are. We're in a time where a lot of these businesses are fading away or the owners are getting older, no retirement plan, no kids to pass the business off to. It's a time in our history where we've had the fewest number of people in the trades. We've got this big push towards college. And so that's left a lot of these companies kind of floundering. But unlike any of the other industries out there, this whole set of skills are going to be needed forever. And so we know there'll be a resurgence into the trades. And so that's where we're where we are focusing a lot of our time and attention this year, and really for the next 5 years, is to build up our investment into those kinds of businesses.
But it's really a fascinating perspective, because you look at carpenters, electricians, all kinds of professional trades or trades that at one point a huge amount of people would have gone into, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, the list goes on and on and on. And it goes to the same thing in healthcare. It goes to technicians and all kinds of other areas. And now you've got a whole world that's going to college and getting degrees that often are meaningless in terms of actually doing a job or profession. So you've got this huge daunting shortage in so many of these things, as we've guided everybody in one direction when that direction is not really often, might not be what's needed for actual jobs in the economy. So fascinating. And Chris, one more question. Did you write a book recently? And will you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So yeah, the book I just finished up is a leadership book. And again, it's really focused on a leadership philosophy that is, I wouldn't say it's unpopular, but it certainly isn't popular. But the philosophy is this idea that we want to love and serve our people toward their fulfillment. And for so long, my definition of leadership was this idea of being strong and confident. I grew up in a home where it was, you know, up in New England, you know, things bad happen, you suck it up, you pick yourself up and you move on, kind of the British stiff upper lip mentality. And I felt like that was being responsible. It was a noble calling to be a leader and to be strong for other people. And I do feel that way. But what I learned in this process, what I've learned over the last couple decades at leading people, is that people really want to see that you're willing to be vulnerable, open up about your weaknesses, open up about the things that you don't know. And in doing so, the most incredible thing happened for me, that people stepped up. They rose up to the gap that I would leave. And I realized that I had been my own glass ceiling, because nobody could rise above where I was in any of these organizations, because I was, you know, the best problem solver, the best manager of crisis, and the strong and the confident. And I would just take up all the space in all the rooms. And what I found was that those people would settle into where I would really put them, instead of rising up, taking on more, doing more, owning more psychologically. It really created shared fate by putting this philosophy into work. And so that's really what the book is focused on, is to hopefully allow people to see that they can really focus on their weaknesses so that other people can fill in those with their strengths.
Take a moment. Tell us the title of the book.
It is called Lead. We are still working on the subtitle of the book, but it's going to be the basically the heart of leadership.
Fantastic. And it's so interesting, because like when people are younger, so many of their kudos and positives and successes come from just focusing on their strengths. As they get a little bit older, they find there is so much gratification in focusing on your weaknesses, though it might not be as profitable as quickly and so many other things. It's really a fascinating perspective, because we've always been big believers in double down on your strengths. But as you get a little bit more mature, you find there's also great, great satisfaction and sometimes great benefit in focusing on your weaknesses too. Chris, I want to thank you for joining us on the Becker Private Equity Business Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.